across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
Hello there. We really appreciate you downloading this podcast from the BBC. And don't forget, we're here fighting for you every day of the week. If you want to contact us, nolan@bbc.co.uk. I hope you enjoy today's podcast. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning. Someone who you've worked with for years, you suddenly find out is being investigated for sex offences against children. He is then standing right beside you, just a few feet away from you, and beside a child, and you don't notice him. That is what our First Minister, Michelle O'Neill, is telling you happened to her with regards to the former press officer from Sinn Féin, Michael McMonagall, who has been convicted of a whole range of child sex offences, including attempting to incite a child under 13 into sexual activity. There are other Sinn Féin people in the Great Hall in Stormont. They don't seem to have noticed their former colleague either. Then on top of that, you have this person working for the British Heart Foundation. And Sinn Féin want to do everything they can to protect children. But this party, which is ingrained in providing legislation, coming up with legislation, that are in constant contact with the police and legislators and lawyers, they couldn't have contacted the British Heart Foundation because it would have been prejudicial, according to Conor Murphy. Now, that's been blown out of the water by the Chief Constable. He says it's not prejudicial. Blown out of the water by the children's charity Nexus. It's not prejudicial. Blown out of the water by former police officers. And yet Conor Murphy stood in front of you all this week when he was talking to Enda McClafferty and sent a public message that it would be prejudicial for a former employer, to contact the current employer of someone suspected of child abuse activity. It's just not true. And questions remain, many questions remain, around what Sinn Féin knew, when they knew it, what they did. Not about the references. Don't forget that then two Sinn Féin press officers, Sean McGeer, Keelan McGinley, they were asked for references when they knew the person they were being asked for references about was suspected of child abuse. And they provided the references. Michelle O'Neill is telling us that as soon as she found out about those references, those two individuals were asked to leave the party. But the question for Sinn Féin this morning is about how determined were they to protect children in terms of a suspected paedophile working for the British Heart Foundation. Could they not have picked up the phone to the police? Have they no access to the police? They certainly had access to the Chief Constable when two police officers arrested people on the Ormo Road. Direct access to the Chief Constable. They certainly, as we've let out on Nolan Live this week, they certainly can make many public pronouncements when they feel that the police investigations into different incidents are not right. And yet when it came to a question about one of their former press officers, Michael McMonagall, they couldn't have done anything. It was a police investigation and therefore they couldn't prejudice it. In fact, they went further. And Conor Murphy said this week, it was not Sinn Féin's job to do so. Let's have a listen.
When we suspended him and he ended his engagement with us, that matter from then until the point that he was charged was a matter for the police. So we have no involvement It's not our job to do the investigation. It's not our job to... Yeah. Sorry, just this point. I mean, the question is, you know, what would you do in those circumstances? We are not involved in the investigation. We are not involved in advising anyone in relation to the investigation. That is a matter for the police. Anything to do, anything in relation to that could potentially be prejudicial. It was up to the police to gather sufficient evidence to decide to charge him.
You're one of the leaders of this country, Mr. Murphy. Your party runs the country along with other political parties. When you talk about not your job, what wasn't your job? What will you do in the future? What will Sinn Féin do in the future? Are they maintaining their position? Is there no learning? It is still the current position of Sinn Féin that they're criticising the British Heart Foundation for employing Michael McMonagall. They should have done more due diligence, according to Sinn Féin. This is the party criticising the British Heart Foundation who issued references to the British Heart Foundation. They said it wasn't referred up. It was their press officers, Sean McGeer, Keelan McGinley, who issued the references. And yesterday afternoon, our chief constable, he called it out. He blew Sinn Féin's argument out of the water.
If indeed we did reach out to Sinn Féin to give information that concerned us about an individual that we felt they should know about, that would prejudice an investigation. That would allow an investigation to happen. That's just a responsibility around any notification requirements we've got. So we have some duty to notify organisations if they would have somebody working for them who had a conviction for certain sexual offences, particularly offences against children. I became aware of this story particularly today. We can't track organisations who are receiving information about individuals who might be working for them. If people write to us, then we'll respond to those people if there's a concern about an individual. There's not a lot more I can really say about that. I know everyone's trying to drag the PS&I into this. If the question is, would that prejudice an investigation? The answer is, and I don't know the detail, I don't see how it would prejudice an investigation, if that's helpful.
The DPMLA and Policing Board member Trevor Clark with us this morning. So the Chief Constable saying he does not see how it would prejudice a police investigation. We can't find anyone outside Sinn Féin who will tell us how it would do so, Trevor.
What has got it wrong? And it's clear from...
Sorry, Trevor, just start again, please. I couldn't hear you.
Sorry, it's actually clear from what Chief Constable said yesterday that it wouldn't have prejudiced the case. So either Conor Murphy, a most senior MLA and minister, government minister that Sinn Féin has got it wrong. So he needs to come out front and apologise. I mean, at the heart of all of this, Stephen, is the safeguarding issue, and we can't undermine the necessity of that. And then you can take it on and we can talk about the events in the Great Hall with the First Minister. And then on the same month, the same British Heart Foundation travels over to Westminster and meets Sinn Féin MPs. Was none of them aware, or should none of them have raised this with the British Heart Foundation? Have they no responsibility to safeguarding of very vulnerable people?
There are, as we've been saying over recent days, there are further wider conversations to be had here, Trevor. At the time when McMonagall was in the Great Hall in Stormont, and at the time when he travelled over with the British Heart Foundation to Westminster, to London, as you've suggested, he was under suspicion. He had not been charged. So is your party saying that if someone has an accusation made against them, that they shouldn't be employable? Or what are you saying?
Well, what we're saying is, I mean, and it was actually 5 months after that visit in Westminster before the British Heart Foundation were made aware or were aware of the fact that this individual was investigated. The case here is this wasn't just common assault. This was sex offences. So those are most serious offences. So I'd have thought there's a moral obligation on anyone if they knew that they went to work for an organisation such as the British Heart Foundation. There's a moral obligation on us all, Stephen, to make them aware. We are allowing, in this case, they are allowing this member or ex-member of their staff to continue to work in a charity with the most vulnerable in society.
So, but just to address that matter, if someone before charge is suspected, is being investigated by the police, but they haven't been charged yet, should there be restrictions around them?
Well, what they can do in their place of work. Action to suspend the member. So they clearly knew more than they're pretending to know today. They knew the seriousness of the allegations. So they were swift to suspend the person based on those allegations. If their suspicion was strong enough to suspend him, then their suspicion should have been strong enough to alert the British Heart Foundation, and no one should believe otherwise.
Well, you don't know that they were pretending anything, but they certainly have made it clear over recent days that they did not want McMonagall to be anywhere about them or their party. Michelle O'Neill has made that clear. In terms of
she didn't want them about them, that's right, in terms of the party. But they were comfortable enough to meet him in a different guise when he was there with the British Heart Foundation. And I think that's the part that we can't let go. There's a vulnerability in all of this, and there's an obligation on us all in relation to safeguarding vulnerable people.
Well, now we turn to this iconic photograph of Michelle O'Neill in the Great Hall in Stormont. She is insisting she did not meet McMonagall. She is insisting she did not see her former colleague just a few yards away from her.
Well, look, Stephen, I'm sure many of your listeners have seen the picture. The Great Hall, you couldn't describe, has been busy that day. The guy was 20 feet from her. There was only about 6 other people in the whole shot. For her to suggest that, I leave that for others to draw their own conclusion when they see the picture. But for me, it's actually unbelievable.
So what happens now?
Well, I mean, I think Sinn Féin need to come out, be honest, up front, apologise for their behaviour and the whole incident. And all of those others who had knowledge of this, they need to all come out collectively and make an apology to the public that they've got this wrong. I mean, they're quick at telling everyone else how to live their lives and how to do things. But in this case, they've got it horribly wrong. And they're at the heart of all of this. And we can't get away from this, Stephen. This is a heinous, suggested a heinous crime, and now he's been found guilty. But they allowed people who were vulnerable to be exposed to this man in full knowledge that they had suspended him for the allegations. So they should have done something. They need to come out, they need to apologise, and they need to also apologise that they got it wrong and that they misled the public.
There are quite a few people, just to alert everyone to this, behind the scenes, who have been a little bit reluctant to talk about this story. Trevor, you're probably learning about this from the first time from us now. We contacted the Safeguarding Board for Northern Ireland. Now, their public pronouncements are that they say their role is to make sure everyone understands the importance of keeping young people safe. Safeguarding is everyone's business, they say. But when we asked the Safeguarding Board in Northern Ireland a series of questions around what employers should do when they find out someone they suspended while under police investigation is working for another employer, they didn't want to answer the questions. They didn't take the opportunity to make public statements to tell us what we should be doing. They diverted us. They said the best people to speak to is the DBS, the Disclosure and Barring Service. Now, the Safeguarding Board for Northern Ireland falls under the remit of the Department of Health. Why would a Safeguarding Board not want to issue at this time public statements about safeguarding children?
I think, Stephen, possibly if you'd asked them that 2 months ago, they may have wanted to answer it. But like John Boucher yesterday, where he didn't want to get into a political debate, it sounds like the Safeguarding have done the same. I think that's disappointing from them. There's a real opportunity to address that for other people, to give us all of the knowledge and what our responsibilities are. So it's disappointing to hear that.
But it's not a safeguarding. It's not a political debate. It's about safeguarding children. We sent them a list of questions. For example, here are the questions that the Safeguarding Board in Northern Ireland diverted us to someone else to answer. What are employers' legal responsibilities around safeguarding in Northern Ireland? What's the best practice for employers if a member of its staff is under police investigation on a safeguarding matter? What is best practice if a member of staff resigns from the organisation while still under police investigation but has not yet been charged? And the safeguarding board in Northern Ireland didn't answer any of those questions and said it would be best to speak to the DBS, a different organisation. What's going on?
Yeah, well, that's concerning in that answer, Stephen, and I think it's something that some of us should follow up.
The Alliance Party with us this morning, Nuala McAllister sits on the policing board. Good morning to you, Nuala.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Criticisms then that in that committee, when Michelle O'Neill was being grilled, that the Alliance Party chair didn't give it enough time, did not give this issue and the scrutiny for Michelle O'Neill enough opportunity.
Well, there are a couple of things I just want to highlight before I go on to that point, and I will address that point, and that is at the centre of this, we have to remember our victims. And so I think it's really important to point out that our thoughts should be with the victims in particular of this case when it comes to McMonagall in terms of his conviction that has now been passed down. I think that's very important, and there are many organisations, including Nexus, which you have referenced, and no doubt the British Heart Foundation too, who want the public and all of us to remember that we need to have that victim-centred approach, and safeguarding needs to be at the heart of everything that we do here. With regards to what went on within the committee yesterday, or on Wednesday, I think it was, you will understand that was not the reason as to why the First Minister was there. But however, the chair did give it opportunity, and the member in particular that you are referencing has been difficult in the past in terms of the way in which he has approached the situation. However, that we take this overall issue very seriously. Stephen, you know, we understand that there is a presumption of innocence until found guilty. However, when it comes to the safeguarding of young people, that is paramount, and that must come first. There are instances in which you can make referrals, for example, to the Gateway team or through social services if you are concerned, if you have concerns about the safeguarding and well-being and protection of children. You may not and you do not need to be aware of who those children are, but you can have concerns around individuals. That is something at a very basic level that MLAs should be aware of. It is something that the leaders of this country and of our government should be aware of, and that's something that should be at the centre of their approach in anything that they do, particularly when we are particularly in the
past. Well, the question is, was Michelle O'Neill, are we seriously suggesting, is anyone seriously suggesting that a politician and a political party, Michelle O'Neill, the First Minister, Sinn Féin, biggest political party we have, they know what they can and cannot say?
Well, I can't speak for them, but what I can say in my role as an individual MLA, not someone who leads the department and has a massive team of advisors, and neither someone who is in a party as big as Sinn Féin, and we know just how disciplined in terms of how they work. But I, in my instance and role as an MLA, have had to refer people onto the Gateway team before just because of concerns, because that is a duty that I have, and I feel that I have that duty morally, ethically, and the issue here that about prejudicing an investigation, we now know to be nonsense. I think we need to ensure that we can restore confidence when it comes to taking that child-centred approach to safeguarding, because that's crucial here.
But I'm sorry, Nuala, there are questions for Paula Bradshaw this morning. You've just said a matter of seconds ago, that the individual who asked the question had been awkward in the past. Well, first of all, what's wrong with being awkward or difficult?
I said difficult. And I think there has been actually rather serious issues there in the past.
But the TV's...
I really think that you're going off on an area that is not relevant, because actually
we are particularly
concerned as to what has happened within
This is the TUV's Timothy Gaston. He is an elected representative. He has a mandate to be there. It's a politician's job to ask difficult questions. He was attempting to ask questions yesterday of the First Minister, and he was told to move on.
Well, the first, my understanding, so and I did important, watch back. I did watch it back and the First Minister attempted to answer those questions, but I don't think we were going to get any different answers from within them. Now, we do recognise within all the committees that the Chair has a roles and responsibilities, but I am in no doubt, and Paul is in no doubt, that this is a very serious situation in which needs to be addressed. But in terms of how we move forward there, and that's the key issue here, is an apology enough to simply move forward? Or what you have previously referenced with regarding the safeguarding board, I think is a major concern in terms of, I think the onus is now on the Department of Health to actually ensure that everyone is across the detail on what happened and what you should do. Because what has happened here is that confidence has been lost in Sinn Féin, and they lead some major departments in our executive. And we have just launched in the past few weeks the domestic violence and sexual abuse strategy. There is an onus, and the executive take it as a priority to tackle violence against women and girls, to safeguard children, to ensure that everything that we do is in the rights and best interests of victims in Northern Ireland. But that's unfortunately the news over the past week and a half has now put us back a few steps. And that's not because of every party in the executive, it is because of one. But with regards to where the Alliance Party stands on this issue, we are quite clear that, yes, you are innocent until proven guilty. But when it comes to the protection of children, safeguarding of children, that is paramount and that comes first.
Let's hear Timothy Gaston attempting to ask questions yesterday in that committee, chaired on Wednesday by Paula Bradshaw from the Alliance Party.
First Minister, you have said that you didn't see him at the event. Going by the photographs that have come to or have been published today, can the Junior Minister Riley say the same? And can you detail what your interaction was with Michael McMonagall on that day?
I'll take the question. I mean, I think I've already dealt with the question.
To be fair,
horrified that anybody would give a reference in this scenario. Had they have asked my permission, it would not have happened. And I think that I've set out clearly earlier just in terms of the rest of it. So if there are any questions in relation to the Executive Office, very happy to take them.
Just before we go off that, can I ask, have you checked to see if the references that were provided were done so on Sinn Féin headed paper?
I have confirmed very clearly that I did not give any okay to any references being given. I would not have seen them, given that I did not even know they existed until it came to my attention last week.
Did you ask for a couple of them?
You said you're only one question. Move on, please. Thank you.
Now, look, think through this. So, Timothy Gaston is asking about a junior minister. Within 3 seconds, Michelle O'Neill takes the question and doesn't answer it about the junior minister. And within 3 seconds of Michelle O'Neill speaking, Paula Bradshaw saying, yes, I think you've answered the question too. And she didn't answer it. She completely swerved the question about the junior minister. And the chair of that committee is saying, I think you've answered the question too. She didn't.
Well, I think you heard from as well. You heard from that committee as well that Timothy Gaston did get an opportunity to ask questions. But what my previous answer still stands.
No, the chair of that committee said, in terms of the question asked by the TUV, that the question had been answered. And the reality is, it had not. Michelle O'Neill swerved around the question about the junior minister, and she was helped to swerve it by Paula Bradshaw affirming that she'd answered it when she hadn't. What is going on in these committees?
Well, first and foremost, what I must say is that Paula does not accept that they answered it in the way that it should have been answered, but they're entitled to say whatever they want to committee. And
why did she say you've answered it? Why did she say the First Minister had answered a question which she clearly had not?
Well, unfortunately, we recognise that within committees, they can answer it whatever way that they like, and it was clear that she'd said that she'd addressed it. That does not mean that we like it in any way, let's be clear.
But you said the Alliance Party chair, the Alliance Party chair said, it supported Michelle O'Neill and said that she had answered a question which she clearly had not about the junior minister.
I think, to be perfectly honest, and I think a lot of people would recognise that the onus is on the wrong thing here. And look, we have said, and I'm on here today, to outline that we are ourselves are disgusted and disappointed in terms of the actions in Sinn Féin with regards to not only the references, but the denial of any knowledge and the failure to represent and to protect victims in all of this, which needs to be at the centre of what we're discussing today. And we ensure in everything that we do that we act with the utmost integrity when it comes to upholding the rights and also the safeguarding of victims. But I'm sure that this issue will arise again. I don't doubt that this issue will arise again, but we take it very seriously. And I was very interested yesterday at the policing board to hear those comments from the chief constable, because I think that, well, they were of particular importance. But Stephen, you are correct in saying that it is a very serious issue. And we do in Alliance ensure that our protocols and our processes that we have in place with the safeguarding of children and young people are correct. That's something that Sinn Féin themselves have to answer. And that's something that we will hold them to account and continue to hold them to account to in the coming days. And we'll see what the difference in any change here, what will be made. But like I said at the opening of my statement this morning, the victims need to be at the centre and the heart of this, because we need to have that those confidence. And remember, we're dealing with young people, not just of those victims, but of their parents and families too.
And like Trevor Clark from the DUP, are you or are you not concerned that the Safeguarding Board for Northern Ireland doesn't want to publicly answer questions at the moment about safeguarding children in the context of this story?
Sorry, can you repeat that? I lost you there for a second.
Sure. Are you in agreement with Trevor Clark, who has expressed concern when we have disclosed that the Safeguarding Board for Northern Ireland it doesn't want to answer questions?
In
terms of advice for employers as to how to safeguard children.
I do have some sympathy in terms of them answering those questions. Perhaps they didn't and couldn't at the time. Maybe they have processes in place. But actually, I am concerned that that's not able to be just put out there, that there isn't something that they can quickly reference or have to hand. But I think it goes back to the issues. You know, I'm an MLA. I have my other colleagues. There are many of us. We have to have our child safeguarding policies within our own individual party. I don't doubt that every party should have those as well. And I know that I have a responsibility and an onus to make referrals where I understand that there may be instances where people are being investigated and they continue to work with children.
We're going to speak to the political editor of the Sunday Times Ireland in just a second or two, Hugh O'Connell, because this story's been talked about in the Republic of Ireland. It's been talked about all over the country. Trevor Clark, final question to you. Given what we now know, is there any question for all of the political parties as to how and why McMonagall was allowed to be in the storm of the state at all?
Well, I mean, I think to be fair to all of the other political parties, they wouldn't have been aware of what Sinn Féin was aware of in relation to his, at that stage, suspected crimes. But just one other point, Stephen, in terms of what Nilla has said, I'm not sure that it's up to the chair to decide how she likes how questions are being asked. And I suppose I would like to pose a question to Nilla. Will she raise it with Paula, the chair of that committee, to allow this to come back onto the agenda, to invite the First Minister and her junior minister along with her to answer and continue to answer questions on this until we bottom it out?
Well, that's a question for you, Nilla.
I honestly do not know if that is even within the remit of the committee with regards, so I can't answer that question, whether they are able to go back to the committee. But I think the overall issue of the safeguarding should come back, not necessarily the TEO, it could be another committee. Like, for example, the Department of Health, and I sit in the Health Committee, and I would be more than happy to hear with regards to the safeguarding the safeguarding unit and within the Department of Health too. I think that there is an opportunity to get to the bottom to any of more of this we should, but it should be for the right reasons, Stephen. I think that's important. It should be for the right reasons. There are a lot of answers that we need, but we also ultimately need to restore that confidence in victims and their families.
Thanks so much for coming on, Nilla. Thank you, Trevor. 03030805555. We'll speak to the Sunday Times political editor and to lots of you in just a sec after the news. Hugh O'Connell, political editor of the Sunday Times Ireland. Hugh, thanks for waiting for us and sorry for the delay. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Hugh. How Is this story going away for Sinn Féin? What's your sense of where it's currently at?
I don't think it is, and I think that one of the people we haven't heard from yet is Mary Lou McDonald. We've just had our budget here this week. There's been lots of Sinn Féin representatives out talking about the budget, criticising the budget. Mary Lou McDonald has used her social media platform and indeed her Dáil platform in Leaders' Questions to raise issues around the budget, raise issues, for example, around this 9 million euro allocated to buy phone pouches, raised issues around the lack of surgeries for children with scoliosis. But she has not faced any sort of media interviews, has not gone before the media this week. And that strikes me slightly unusual after a budget is delivered by the government. And, you know, obviously there's this big looming question of what did she know and when did she know about this issue with Michael McMonagall? And when did she become aware, for example, that two party press officers had provided references for him? And of course, obviously, you know, there's a whole credibility question here, which, I mean, your previous guests were talking about this issue of so many. I think that the Irish News has it this morning of at least five Sinn Féin representatives within close proximity of Michael McMonagall when he came to Stormont in 2023 with the British Heart Foundation. And apparently, you know, these people, we are asked to believe, or certainly in the case of Michelle O'Neill, we're asked to believe that she didn't know that he was there or didn't see him. So, look, I expect this is going to drag on. Certainly, I think Sinn Féin's political opponents here are making hay out of this. We've had the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, has talked about it, expressing his a concern, says it's deeply concerning, legitimate questions for Sinn Féin, that, you know, there's nothing more important than the safety of our children. What we are reading and learning in real time is deeply disturbing. Two Fine Gael TDs in the Dáil this week tried to raise the issue in a bid to get Mary Lou McDonald to answer questions about it, but were unsuccessful. So I think this is going to rumble on, Stephen, and I think until Mary Lou McDonald comes out and answers questions about it, I think it's going to be something that's going to hang over Sinn Féin and really kind of overshadow the party as it attempts to, you know, get talking about the issues that will dominate the Irish general election, which is due any time in the next 4 months.
Well, exactly, and it is that election looming that Sinn Féin will be very aware about. How concerned do you think they will be about this issue being in the news in the south as well? The Taoiseach talking about it so close to an election. How much is it resonating with voters in the south, in the Republic?
Well, it's not evidence thus far as to how much it's resonating with voters. But I mean, I do know. I mean, I've been on a couple of shows down here in the south in recent days, and Sinn Féin representatives who've been on have been asked about it and have been posed quite difficult questions and have given quite at times incomprehensible answers. I heard a Sinn Féin, I was on a programme last night with a Sinn Féin representative, Maurice Quinlivan from Limerick, who was trying to dispute that John Boucher meant what he said because he wasn't talking about any specific case, for example, when he was asked about it, when the PSNI chief constable was asked about it yesterday. So these kind of answers are stretching credibility, really. And I think until Sinn Féin kind of clears this up, I think you're going to get their political opponents repeatedly raising this issue because they can see that, you know, raising this issue is going to cause a problem for Sinn Féin. And as we well know, as you and I both know, Stephen, Sinn Féin has a questionable track record when it comes to issues of child protection in terms of the Republican movement. You know, we only have to look back at the Maria Cahill case, for example. These are all issues that Sinn Féin have had to address in the past and have not addressed, I think, adequately in some instances, or the Republican movement hasn't addressed them adequately in some instances. And so here is another example, I think, which poses very difficult questions for the party, and which Mary Lou McDonald, the party leader, you know, as we speak here on Friday morning, you know, nearly a week on from this story breaking, she hasn't spoken one word about it, as far as I'm aware, as far as I can see, and certainly I've checked with colleagues as to whether she's been out anywhere, but I haven't seen her talk about this issue at all, and I think that's quite extraordinary at this stage of the week.
The irony in some of this, for those of us who are in the field of journalism, the one of the press officers was Keenan McGinley and Sean McGeer, who gave the references. It would have been Sean McGeer had he not have been the one that issued the references. He's part of the story, of course, now. It would have been him strategizing for Sinn Féin, how they deal with this story, how they get out of the difficulties around this story. And, of course, in the absence of Sean McGeer, Sinn Féin have a hole now in their press operation so close to dealing with this story. And as I talked to different journalists yesterday, Hugh, the question, the obvious question remains, in terms of Sean McGeer, he was at the very top of the press strategy for Sinn Féin. He therefore knew every vulnerability that there would be for that party. It was him out firefighting when anyone else messed up. Why did he provide the reference? Why did he put his party in that position?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know Sean McGeer that well, but I have dealt with him over the years. Obviously, I deal primarily with their press operation in the South. But I mean, anyone who's dealt with Sinn Féin, any journalist who's dealt with Sinn Féin over the years, and you know, I've been up and down to Northern Ireland over the years, will have encountered Sean McGeer and will have dealt with him. And you know, a very kind of credible person, a very serious figure, a very large figure, looming large within the Sinn Féin and within its press and communications operation, and deeply embedded within the organization. And it strikes me as astonishing the naivety with which he appears to have displayed here by providing the reference for an individual who was suspected of child sex offences. I mean, it just doesn't compute for me personally, anyway, knowing him. I don't know him well, but knowing him the little bit that I do, that someone at the senior echelons of Sinn Féin's communications operation wouldn't have foreseen the huge ramifications of a decision such as that to provide a reference for an individual suspected of such serious crimes as Michael McMonagall was at the time. And yes, you're right, in the run-up to the election, although Sean primarily operated out of the north and was responsible for the northern press operation, there's no doubt that he would have been involved in the sort of All-Ireland's nature of the organisation, and would have been kind of centrally involved in strategising and planning the communications around the general election campaign here in the South. So it does leave a big hole there for Sinn Féin. But I mean, I think bigger than the hole are the questions that exist for the party, and as I said, for Mary Lou McDonald, which she will have to address at some point in the coming days. This kind of strategy that Sinn Féin deploy, and it's a strategy they've deployed for as long as I've been covering politics here in the South for well over a decade now, that when these kind of controversies arise, they tend to go to ground. Senior figures in the party tend to go to ground. Now, I mean, look, you can't necessarily level that charge at Michelle O'Neill. She's come out and answered questions. You might not be satisfied with the answers. You might not find the answers credible, but she has fronted up on this. But the party leader not addressing it, I think, is quite astonishing at this stage in the news cycle, given it's a story that's trundled on for the last few days.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for speaking to us, Hugh. That's Hugh O'Connell, political editor of the Sunday Times. To you now, John and Newton Abbey. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning. Question I'd like to ask, Maybe we've always been very quiet here and all this. She's a justice minister of this country. I wonder if she agree with the chief constable's assertion that had Sinn Féin contacted the British Heart Foundation, it wouldn't have prejudiced the case.
Sorry, so, Naomi Long's party. Naomi Long can't be doing every interview. The Alliance Party did put someone up today, and on behalf of Naomi Long, the Alliance Party have said that there are serious questions to answer here. They have encouraged further scrutiny of Sinn Féin. What else do you want them to do?
I don't want party members coming out. I want the head of Alliance Party, who is the Justice Minister of this country. She's responsible for anything to do with the police, etc., and justice in this country. I think it's on her head to be coming out and giving her assertion of whether or not she agrees with the chief constable. And the other thing about Sinn Féin is,
well, we need to be careful of our language this morning, don't we?
Well, I haven't said anything that's wrong. I just think it's that Naomi Long should be coming out and answering the question, does she agree with the chief constable's assertion that had the Sinn Féin done what they should have done, was to contact the British Heart Foundation and say, this guy is under investigation for child sexual activities. They should have done that. And does she agree with the Chief Constable's assertion? Simple as that there. And I wonder, I don't know whether, I'm sure there is, an Irish Heart Foundation in the south of Ireland. And I sometimes wonder, has Sinn Féin contacted them? Had it been involved them rather than the British Heart Foundation?
Well, for, that's you're entitled to ask whatever questions in your own head, I guess, that you want.
I think Naomi Long should be coming out and stating where she's going to say it with the Chief Constable's assertions or not.
And in terms of the PSNI, you know, the Chief Constable talking about the police being dragged into things, this was the biggest political party in Northern Ireland asserting to the public that to inform a future employer would prejudice a police investigation. Now, to ask the PSNI a question as to whether that is true is not dragging the police into things. It is asking our police force in Northern Ireland to engage in a public discussion so that we all know whether we should be informing future employers, whether future if we are an employer ourselves.
When it comes to the safety of our children, they all have a moral duty to inform no matter who it is. They all should have a moral duty to do so, because the first thing in life is that our children is kept safe and they should never be anywhere near these monsters.
Thomas is in Belfast. Morning, Thomas.
Hello.
Thank you, John.
Stephen.
Morning, Thomas. Go ahead.
Hello, Stephen. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Stephen, yet again, you're on a witch hunt against Sinn Féin and you're ignoring several major points here. Number one, proven innocent until proven guilty. And number two, housing and health, education and the economy, stupid. They're the big, big ticket items. And what you're doing is giving the DUP and other people like that a platform to score points off each other about something that is quite serious, but it's not as serious as other things. For example, policing board members coming on, there's not enough money to put police officers in the street, Stephen. You're the biggest show in the country. When are you going to start and deal with the biggest issues in the country?
Well, let me address that.
Everybody.
Well, let me deal with that. First of all, we deal with all of those other issues all year round, day in, day out. Secondly, for you to suggest that us asking questions, for you to describe it as a witch hunt, us asking questions around child protection, us asking how a minister in our government can publicly confuse a message around what prejudices a police investigation. For example, why didn't Conor Murphy, before publicly saying that to the BBC, check with the Chief Constable that what he was saying was right? These ministers have responsibility for clear messaging around the prevention of child abuse. So to suggest to people that something would prejudice an investigation might just mean that an employer doesn't tell a future employer important information. So that's not a witch hunt. That's us doing our job.
If I can come back to you. See, yesterday, I near fell off the sofa. I'm online, and a DUP MLA and Fermanagh says, A5, this is fantastic. All the A5, Fermanagh, all the big farm owners down there. And then a DUP MLA was on the TV, and he says, I'm a civil engineer. He says, this section in the north, it can't go ahead because there's so many rivers. I just finished working for a company that has been doing a design on this A5 for the last 25 years, and an MLA comes on, and to me, that's a story that you've missed.
Well, he didn't say.
Members of
he
the
didn't
same
say.
Party. One in the Protestant area.
Yeah, but you're misquoting him.
And then
you're misquoting him.
Watch the
he
TV.
Did not. Well,
I watched
go and watch
TV,
it.
Says,
go and watch it again. He did not say the project couldn't go ahead. He was talking about concerns about what would need to be done with regards to flooding before it went ahead. Michael and Unabi, good morning, Michael. You've misquoted him. Good morning,
hello.
Michael.
Good morning, Stephen. I mean, this is really is a very, very serious issue. And what is being called into question is both the honesty, integrity, and the confidence that this, not just the parties in Northern Ireland, but the people of Northern Ireland have in a minister who is prepared to deflect, a first minister who, again, is prepared to deflect and not answer questions. My question's got to be this. Is there anyone, whether it be Alliance, DUP, prepared to table a motion at Stormont asking for a vote of confidence in the minister and in the first minister? You can huff and puff all you want, but at the end of the day, if they're still in place and they're still in place without the retention of integrity and honesty, then what does that say about our government?
Well,
what does it say about the leaders of our government?
Well, when you talk about integrity and honesty, Michelle O'Neill and Conor Murphy would very much say that they have been honest about all of this, so honest about their view on all of this that they're being challenged, that this is their sincerely held view that it would prejudice a police investigation.
Stephen, so, it's one thing to have an opinion and this whole a sincerely held view. It's another thing to be absolute, to be honest. They're two completely different things. You can be sincerely wrong, Stephen, but that doesn't mean that you're honest. I mean,
well,
this
you
is
can
the
be
whole point
you can be sincerely wrong, but it does not mean that you are being dishonest. Sophie in Belfast,
well, does,
morning,
Stephen.
Sophie.
I'm sorry.
Good morning,
hello,
Sophie.
Hiya.
It does not. It does not. Good morning, Sophie.
Hiya.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I got incredibly frustrated there with your caller. The sentence that this is not as serious as I think you referred to funding for the policing board or something. I think the victims and potential victims or other victims that haven't even spoken out there of perpetrators of the type of crimes we're discussing today, I think they would highly disagree. My background is safeguarding. I'm a mother of four. And the idea that this isn't one of the most serious things that we could be talking about baffles me. As people have already said there, you know, this is not the first time safeguarding issues have been raised in this party. I don't have strong political sort of affiliations to any party. I voted for a number of different parties in this country, so I am not a Sinn Féin hater. I've actually shook Martin McGuinness's hand back in the day. We discussed our grandfathers being farmers in Donegal around the same time. So I do not hate Sinn Féin, but a witch hunt is created for political points and all that kind of thing. Sinn Féin have allowed this platform to be built themselves. The fact that we are talking about, well, is it someone I think I heard of this week, is this the fifth person within Sinn Féin where there's been safeguarding issues raised and who knew what when? It is astonishing to me that the general public...
No, hold on now, because we need to be accurate here. What someone referred to early on was they believed that there were five people. I haven't seen the Irish News this morning. I think a caller was suggesting earlier on the Irish News, and we'll check this now, was reporting that there were five people from within Sinn Féin who were at that event that day where McMonagall was in the Great Hall.
My apologies.
Michelle O'Neill. And
right,
I think the five people referred to both that event and the event in London.
My apologies. Well, I mean, I just find it really baffling that anybody could think that this was not like one of the most serious things we could be talking about. You know, this guy is now convicted, I believe. Yes, he's convicted. He pled guilty. You know, this is just madness that there's even a conversation about, you know, if this should be discussed or if it's being discussed too much or whatever. We need to know what on earth could happen in a party that is running our country. They are literally the people making the law and running our departments, that they have allowed a man to end up professionally working alongside vulnerable children, not just children, but vulnerable children as well, that he could be still working whilst an investigation is ongoing, whilst there is major concern about him. Let's be real, which allowed basically the potential for further victims to be created. We don't know if there was, but how many times have we heard serious case reviews across the UK about child protection in many different spheres where people who were either suspected or known risks somehow, some way, fell through the cracks, ended up working in other places or being in other places with children, and further victims were created. That's all I wanted to say. I think it's madness that this is even debatable, that it's serious. This is so beyond serious.
There are so many questions around this that I have, and maybe some that we're not entitled to know. I don't know, right? But here's just a couple of questions, Sophie, in my mind. So you have Michael McMonagle here, who was trying to some of the offences included attempting to incite a child under 13 into sexual activity. Did the police check his phone, I wonder? Because you have this parallel running along, that this was someone at the heart of a political movement, Sinn Féin. So there is always a reluctance on behalf of the authorities. Not always. Look at the trouble the police have got themselves into when they wrongly interrogated journalists' phones. But I just wonder, did the police seize his phone, given the fact that he would have had sensitive information within his job in Sinn Féin, right? I don't know whether we're entitled to know that, but it's certainly a question in my head. But here's the main question in my head, Sophie. Sinn Féin as a political party, this week in that BBC interview with Enda McClafferty, how much did they want to get the public message, not the political message from their party, the public message in terms of what we should do when we suspect that there is a vulnerability within an organisation, an employer, in other words? What should we do? Now, have we had that clarity from Conor Murphy? Do you think we have, Sophie?
I mean, I haven't heard the entirety of the media kind of coverage of it. I heard there briefly talking about the Safeguarding Board as well, not really willing to comment or
what's
give
that
very
about?
Explicit, you know, guidance. But what I would say is, if we have learned nothing from serious case reviews across the last lot of decades, it is that no matter who you are, no matter where you work, sensitive information on your phone or not, if you are concerned about the protection of children, it is not just professional, it is a personal responsibility to phone Gateway or police and say, look, I know this, I'm concerned.
We've got to leave it there.
Police or Gateway or just, you know, but it's a personal
Sophie,
responsibility. I don't think you can escape those people. Thank you very much. Bye.
Paula Bradshaw has been in touch with the Nolan Show this morning. Questions were being asked about Paula's role while Michelle O'Neill was being scrutinised. And Paula has sent the following through to the Nolan Show. She has said the role of the committee for the executive office is to scrutinise the work of its ministers, departmental officials and those in receipt of public money for the delivery of services and programmes. On Wednesday, the committee had three panels. The first, says Paula, being the first and deputy first minister and the two junior ministers. Then executive office officials regarding work on the asks from the summer's recall. And lastly, the PSNI regarding its response to the racist violence in the summer. The time for this session was extremely tight, and Paula Bradshaw, in her capacity of chair of the committee, allowed most members time to ask First Minister and Deputy First Minister two questions, while both Brian Kingston and Timothy Gaston were allowed three, given that they were asking about this matter of what the First Minister knew about this issue. And that's coming into us this morning from Paula Bradshaw. What I would ask back to Paula, and obviously that's a statement, if Paula's available and now or in future days, we will welcome her on. But what I would ask Paula, Paula's clearly saying there, look, this was about time and you've got to get lots of, you've got to control as the chair, the time constraints of getting lots of different issues being discussed. But what I would ask Paula this morning is why she, as the chair, said, stipulated as a fact, that the First Minister had answered a question about the junior minister when clearly Michelle O'Neill did not. So why did you do that, Paula? And that question was not answered by Michelle O'Neill. It just wasn't. She ducked it. And we'll hopefully hear from Paula. She's a regular on the Nolan Show in the coming days. Now, lots of you are still calling us about this. We will come back to this this morning. Next, a resolution has been reached by the executive at Stormont on how they will bring in more money. It's been agreed that regional rates next year will increase by between 2.5% and 4% to meet the target set to the executive by the UK government of raising at least £113 million in an attempt to bring in more money. But was that just a populist cop-out? So they, or is that actually them defending the public at a time when there is a cost of living crisis? So there was a decision by Stormont. Do they raise a lot more money and redistribute it around the different departments that desperately need money? Or do they protect you and raise as little as possible just to meet that government target of £113 million? Anne Watt is director of the think tank Pivotal. Good morning, Anne.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Good morning. Well, they have clearly gone for raising as little as they needed to. And is that the right thing to do, Anne?
I think, Stephen, they've left the door open to raise more. My reading of that yesterday is that they have said that they can meet the requirement set for them by the UK government of raising an additional £113 million. They can do that, as you said, by raising rates next year by between 2.5% and 4%. So they've indicated that that's going to happen. But I definitely thought they were also saying we may need to do more than that. I think what we saw in that document that was published yesterday was a recognition of the need for our politicians here to take more responsibility for managing the budget, which does mean thinking about how are they spending the money? Are they spending it most efficiently? Do they need to be doing more to reform and transform public services? And do they need to be doing more to raise more revenue? So I think what they were saying yesterday was, here's a framework where we're going to think about raising more revenue in the future. And they're saying we do need to consider all the options. So I would say that the door's very much been pushed more open, actually, by our politicians in that document yesterday. And but we might be looking at increased revenue raising. So they haven't decided yet. They haven't decided what to do for 25-26 yet. Yeah, but I think they're indicating to all of us that that conversation is going to happen about if we want to have more public services, then we have to pay for them. And there's been a lot of discussion with the UK government in recent months about getting a fair and sustainable funding allocation for Northern Ireland, and a lot of discussion about this new needs-based floor in the Barnett formula. All of that is helpful. I think the big point is, once Northern Ireland gets a fair and sustainable funding agreement with the UK government, it then needs to start making its own choices about how it spends the money. Politics is all about making choices. You cannot do everything. You can't have more services with no funding to pay for them. If you want more services, if you want things to improve in health and education, you may need to put more money in and to raise more money.
But look, here's what I'm asking. Certainly over the years where I've dealt with stories and you see different documents coming out from government, the first thing I look for is there a definitive date by which something will be done? Because if you look at all the different agreements where political parties purport to have reached agreement, or government is putting out messaging to the public, we have learnt many, many times in Northern Ireland that unless there are deadline dates and money attached to those, that they tend to drift. So what we have here, Anne, is we have a decision to put the rates up, but we do not have any definitive decisions, do we, as to put anything else up or commit to not putting it up. It's on the longer finger. Now, when do they have to decide by?
Yeah, and you're right, Stephen, you're right to always look at, you know, what specifically is being promised here, what's the date, where's the money, where's the targets, exactly what is going to happen, because it's easy, I think, for politicians to talk in quite vague terms or quite aspirational terms. I think what we've got here is a statement yesterday in that new fiscal sustainability plan that points towards the discussions that will happen about the budget for 25-26. So the budget that's going to be set for the year starting in April 2025, which is not that long away now. And that process within government, with the civil servants working on it and the ministers then making decisions, that process is starting now. And within that process, the executive will have to decide what do they want to do about raising revenue locally. So obviously they raise some revenue through the rates and they can vary that depending on how much they decide to increase the rates by. So that debate is going to happen in the coming, where are we? We're in October. So in the coming 6 months, that debate's going to be going on about how much funding do we need for public services in Northern Ireland, how much are we getting from the UK government, and do we want to top that up more by raising more money from people here?
When they have talked about this decision around the rates, right, that we know that increasing the rates means that they can meet that target set by the British government of raising the 113 million. Does that, Anne, mean that they are signalling that they will not hit those people who own the most expensive properties in Northern Ireland? In other words, those people that are sitting on the million-pound houses and the value of their property is capped at 400-odd grand when rates are being determined. Have they committed to not looking at that? Is this it in terms of rates?
No, I don't think they've made that decision yet, Stephen. So I think in that document yesterday, it says that they're going to publish something in the coming weeks about the rates reliefs. So you might remember that there was a consultation process actually while the executive was down. It happened, a consultation process about all the rates relief, whether that's domestic or non-domestic, including the cap on higher value properties, which, as you say, if you... there's a maximum bill that even if you have an extremely expensive house, you don't pay more than a maximum of around £4,000 a year. So there's going to be some announcement coming out about that in the coming weeks, about what the executive has decided to do about that relief and about the various other reliefs as well, like the one on early payment and the one on landlord allowances. So watch this space on that. I mean, that relief, That is not going to solve our public finance problems. The total value of that relief is about £11 million. So, you know, people may feel that it's symbolically important and they may feel that people who are better off maybe should be paying more, but it's not going to solve our public finance problems.
And thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Back to our top story today, Sinn Féin. And their former press officer, Michael McMonagle, who has pled guilty to a range of child sex offences. This is what you're calling us about. Kevin in North Belfast. Morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, it's just a wee question here. I think that there should be some sort of vetting process. I think the British Heart Foundation have failed down here in a way, because anyone that's connected with vulnerable adults or young children and their protection should be vetted before they're hired. And also, I think maybe the political...
Well, part of the BHF doing... Part of the BHF... Hold on a second. Part of the BHF's vetting process was contacting two members of Sinn Féin.
No, this is a different thing in references. I worked as a taxi driver, and classroom assistants both have to do security checks to make sure that they're fit people to work with the public. And that situation that we're talking about, there should be a vetting process, the same security clearance being undertaken before anyone can work with vulnerable adults or young children.
Well, the British Heart Foundation are publicly saying that they have robust processes in place. They also are saying, with regards to the job that McMonagle was applying for, that that job did not require a Access NI check, and they ask, they say, for professional references. You know, they and you know, if you're going to someone that is essentially, I don't know what Sean McGeer's title was. Was it director of communications, or was it, was he the head press officer? We'll check that. But this is a guy who had access all areas in our government building. This is a guy who would stand beside when Michelle O'Neill was meeting prime ministers and leaders flying in from around the world. Sean McGeer was there.
Well, then
that's who provided one of the references.
Then there should be access security checks on anybody that is involved with anybody, that charitable body or governmental body that has to deal with vulnerable adults or young children. It's a simple thing to do. I went through it myself, and it was done probably one day.
Geraldine's next. Morning, Geraldine.
Good morning, Stephen. Right, first of all, obviously what he is accused of, and I think, has he said he's guilty of it? I'm not really sure.
Correct. But yes, he has. Yes, he has. Ridiculous. He's pled guilty. McMonagall has pled guilty. Yes.
Right, so it goes without saying, you know, that that is absolutely ridiculous. But just the way you have been going on all week is really getting on my nerves, to be very truthful. To me, it just sounds like the story case Mark II. But that aside, the Heart Foundation, and as I understand it, is not a children's charity. So there would be no safeguarding issue there. Maybe I'm wrong. Is that right in terms of references and stuff?
The British Heart Foundation.
It's not a children's charity.
The British Heart Foundation, the clue's in the title. It is not positioning itself as a children's charity. But obviously children will interact with many organisations, including the British Heart Foundation. Children, in other words, have heart problems. Can I address the first point to you?
Yes.
So when this program's been on air now 20 odd years. Okay.
I understand that, yes.
When this program,
most of that time.
All right. And I just want to, I think this is important to say, because this is about a relationship with you and with the rest of the public. When this program did deep dive questioning and investigations into the DUP, okay, around RHI as an example, we were accused of being anti-unionist. When this program did the Bobby Story funeral, we were accused of being anti-nationalist. What this program does when we get up in the morning is, without fear or favour, we ask the questions which we think are journalistically important.
To address the Bobby Story issue one more time.
A team in the BBC, an editorial team across the BBC. So let me just address the Bobby Story one more time. You look at how Boris Johnson was pursued. It actually brought him down when he broke the rules, so-called Partygate. This programme does not apologise for asking questions on behalf of those people who followed all the rules that Sinn Féin did not. It was nothing to do with religion or where they were from. And it never will be. And this story today, it's nothing to do with it being Sinn Féin. It's to do with a government minister telling the public that for an employer to tip off a future employer would prejudice a police investigation.
Well,
religion,
Stephen, I can tell you,
background
I am not ashamed.
Does not
I need to speak because you've called me back six times.
That's fair enough.
Not a Sinn Féin supporter, but when I feel that somebody is being, is the word lambasted or whatever, then I need to speak up. I would do it for anybody. When you have other people on, I phone up to say the same thing.
And you're
thing.
Right to do so.
I understand 100%. What you're saying, but to me, as one of your listeners, it just feels like that. Obviously, the crime is ridiculous and nobody would want any children to be in any harm. So obviously, that, you know, that goes without saying that I certainly am not standing up for anything like that. But I just feel sometimes you come across, and I know what you're saying about, oh, I'm doing this story and I'll do this and that and the other. It's just my opinion this morning.
And look, thank you for making it, and thank you for calling us. And I hope you continue to listen to us, and I hope at least you will consider that the Nolan Show is criticised every day of the week, depending on what story we're doing and who we're doing it about, and we're just trying to do the right thing. But thank you, Geraldine. Thank you for calling us. I'm seeing here this morning the Belfast Telegraph. Let me just check. The Belfast Telegraph is reporting that the Apple Store in Victoria Square is leaving Victoria Square, and it's moving into the city centre. It's just interesting, isn't it? Back to this story again. The TUV's Jim Allister has been speaking to us this morning.
There's no surprise in that. The suggestion by Murphy was wholly bogus, to suggest that one employer in private communications to another employer, if they revealed that someone may be subject to a police investigation, that some way would prejudice the police investigation, was absolute torch from the beginning. And I'm not surprised the Chief Constable has blown it out of the water.
But what we have here is mixed messaging this week around child protection.
Absolutely. Sinn Féin, by their words and by their deeds, has dug themselves into an indefensible position. Crowned off with the First Minister telling us laughingly that though a person she knows was standing in front of her within 10 feet, that she didn't see him.
Well, she might not have seen him.
Well, then she should go to Specsavers, and she should stop trying to take the people of Northern Ireland for fools. And then it's crowned by the fact that standing beside her is her special advisor. Did he not see him? Her junior minister, Mr. Riley, is there. Did she not see him? You know, none of this adds up. But the fundamental here is that Sinn Féin officials of the highest rank, namely Sean Maguire, the chief spin doctor, give a commendation to a person who turned out to be a paedophile so that he could go work for another employer. And that is the purpose of a reference. And if it had been adverse, then there's no doubt the person wouldn't have got the job. So we can reasonably infer it was a commendation of him, which advocated for him in getting the job.
Now, when Sean Maguire filled in that reference, Jim, as you well know, when Sean McGeer filled in that reference, as you well know, McMonagall was pleading his innocence and had not been charged.
Yes, but as Sinn Féin well knew, he was subject of a police inquiry, and as they well knew, that's why they parted company with him. Yet they were prepared to unload him onto another employer by concealing that fact. That is where they fell down on their safeguarding issues, and this is fundamentally a safeguarding issue. You know, this is a government which talks about, oh, we've got strategies to protect women and children and girls and everything else. And here on the most fundamental issue of safeguarding children, we have the First Minister fail in regard to the responsibilities of her party. Of course, it's in a long tradition of Sinn Féin showing disregard for victims of violence and of sexual violence. You only have to go back to the Maria Caco case, or the tradition within the IRA of moving people around once allegations were made. It seems that old habits die hard with Sinn Féin.
So what needs to happen next?
Well, Sinn Féin need to come out and be honest and frank with the people. And the first thing they should do is they should publish these references. Let us see, did they commend them, as I believe they did. Let us see, were they on Sinn Féin notepaper? Were they signed off by individuals who signed themselves as Sinn Féin press officers? Were they owned by the party in those references? And if they were owned by the party, then that implicates the party to the very depths of this matter in terms of their failures in regard to safeguarding. I think it's about time we got some honesty and transparency. And I think it was shameful that at the scrutiny committee, so-called, on Wednesday, the chair, a lion's little helper to the Sinn Féin First Minister, shut down debate.
That's a chair trying to control a debate, trying to
move
things all in the order of the day.
No, when Timothy Gaston sought to ask the junior minister what she knew about this, because she was present, The First Minister refused to let her answer, and the chairman endorsed that. Now, that is not scrutiny. That is cover-up. And that is a failure of a committee in that regard. So there hasn't been the interrogation of this. There should have been by a scrutiny committee. And Sinn Féin, I think they've got away with it. Well, I think public opinion thinks that they are trying it on with the public and think we're all fools.
Your party is now calling for an investigation of breaches, of potential breaches of the ministerial code by Michelle O'Neill. Where are you getting that from?
Well, for example, what would the breaches even be? Well, it was the derogatory comments towards Timothy Gaston that he cared nothing for women, which, of course, is showing disrespect to a public representative who for which there's no possible justification for such a thing. And that all happened under the chairmanship of the Alliance chair of that committee and was allowed to pass instead of being called to account for making such an outrageous comment. So when the chair of that committee failed to deal with it, then the next stopping post is asking the Standards Commissioner to deal with it.
Michelle O'Neill has made Woman of the Year in the Time 100 survey. She is the most successful political leader in Northern Ireland in terms of a party commanding a mandate from the people who live here.
Not the most successful in terms of meeting the safeguarding obligations that arrest on any public figure and in any public party such as Sinn Féin, where they have lamentably failed in their safeguarding obligations and have scurried with every indefensible pretense that they did what they should have done when patently they did not. You know, you've
Well, she says that as soon as she found out about those references, she made sure that those two press officers, Sean McGeer, Keelan McGinley, were no longer with the party.
Yes, but she didn't make sure, and her party didn't make sure that Mr. McMonagle didn't get a post with a public charity which deals with children. In fact, it would appear they aided and abetted that process by virtue of references which assisted them into that job. That's the feeling of safeguarding.
Do you think there are other questions that need to be asked here?
Well, I think there are fundamental questions that I've articulated here, and I think Sinn Féin have failed so far to answer them. But I think it is important to have a review of how valid and how enforceable and how useful our safeguarding measures are. If the lead party of government can drive a coach and horses through them in an instance like this, then patently they are not up to scratch, or else they're not being implemented. And if they're not being implemented by the lead party of government, then dear help us all.
Okay. Jim Allister, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Jim Allister from the TUV. As I was saying earlier in the programme, Paula Bradshaw, in terms of the committee that she chaired, has very much been rejecting any statements that she didn't allow questioning. She did allow questioning. She said the time for the session was extremely tight. Paula Bradshaw, in her capacity of chair of the committee, allowed most members' time to ask the First Minister and Deputy First Minister two questions, while both Brian Kingston and Timothy Gaston, that's Brian Kingston from the DUP, Timothy Gaston from the TUV, were allowed three, given that they were asking about this matter of what the First Minister knew about this issue. So Paula would very much say that she facilitated questions being asked so that the First Minister could be and was scrutinised. We will see you tonight on 5 Live, the Nolan Show across the UK at 10 o'clock. Have a good weekend. See you back here on Radio Ulster on Monday. And thanks for listening this week. Stephen Nolan Show.